Welcome, David, from Stanford's Bill Lane Center for the American West, and we're really excited that all of you are here today. David, can you start us off?
Thank you, Noel. As Noel just said, I'm David Kennedy. I'm the director of the Bill Lane Center for the American West at Stanford. We're very, very pleased to be partnering with Noel and with Next 10 to launch this project that you're going to hear about in more detail in just a few minutes. A few people I need to thank who've made this possible, in addition, of course, to Noel and his staff, Sarah Henry, John Christensen, our executive director, Thad Kauser, our visiting scholar at the center this year from University of California at San Diego, his graduate students, Mike Binder and Vlad Kogan, and our partners at Berkeley at the Institute of Governmental Studies, Jack Citrin and Ethan Rarick, and our partner, who I think is not here today, Tim Hodson from Cal State Sacramento. As you may have figured out already, I'm speaking partly or mostly for the academic branch of this enterprise, representing Stanford, Berkeley, and Cal State Sacramento. We're two public institutions and one private institution of higher education, but we all of us share a deep anxiety, bordering on fear, I think it's fair to say, and concern over the fate of our state. I believe it's not an exaggeration to say that California today is in danger of becoming America's first failed state. There's a litany of issues that I could recite that face us as a state. But just to boil it down to what I think are the big three, I think are the state of the economy, chronic conflicts that are going to deepen over water, and, of course, the character of our governance or governmental structures. And if I can lift the line from 1 Corinthians, these three abide, all three, the economy, water, and government, but the greatest of these is government, because without settling the issues about efficient government, we will not be able to address the other issues that are on the docket, economy and water leading amongst them. I heard an address the other day by Ron George, the Chief Justice of the California State Supreme Court, and he ended his address with a memory that I'd just like to share with you. He recollected the moment when Benjamin Franklin was asked a question by a Philadelphian as he emerged from Independence Hall after the drafting of the Constitution of 1787, and a crowd was outside waiting to hear the results of what the founders had just done. And someone asked Franklin, "So what kind of government are we to have then?" And Franklin legendarily replied, "It would be a republic if you can keep it." Now, the remark implies that it's at least imaginable that the republican form of government of which we're so proud can be lost. And I do think, without exaggeration, that's a possibility today in this state. I think we face a crisis of governance, and unless we resolve it, the future of California is not going to be anything, it will not resemble anything like the past that all of us have enjoyed as residents of this state, some of us for many generations. So that's what we're about here, is trying to address some of those issues about making government more efficient and responsive. And I'll now turn it over to Noel, who's going to tell you in a little more detail just how we're going to get started with this. Noel? I was asked to make one announcement, and I forgot. Well, let me just return to that. For media and press people here, we have two resources. They're both easily identifiable because they're arguably the two tallest people in the room, John Christensen and Jordan Pierce. And if you have media people have any particular questions, they're both going to be available out there in the lobby area, and you can find them out there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, David. You are very eloquent, and I know you've been an amazing professor for many years, so thank you very much. It's a pleasure to partner with you and Stanford University. First of all, I'd like to recognize all the elected officials in the room, and I know we are honored to have Senator Maldonado. I'd like to thank Senator for coming today. Are there any other elected officials in here today? Could you stand up and identify yourself, please? Great. Welcome. Over there?
I'm the 12th Community College Board of Trustees of the
Thank you for coming.
And Joan Buchanan has her representative. Andrea's here. There you are.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much for coming. So it's a real honor to be here today. And just to give you an overview of the program, I'm going to speak for just a little bit, and then we're going to introduce Mark DiCamillo from Field Poll to deliver the results of our amazing poll. Before that, you're all going to do the same poll that Mark asked Californians to do. We're going to compare the results. Then we have our wonderful panel here that's going to be moderated by Jack Citrin from the University of California, Berkeley. And then after that, Sarah Henry from Next 10 and Thad from Stanford are going to give a brief overview of California Choices, our new well-used California Choices website will be introduced. And then Susan from Common Knowledge will actually have a little Q&A with all of you to figure out how we can reach Californians in terms of what we're trying to do. So a little bit about Next 10. I founded it 6 years ago because I was concerned about the future of the state. I was concerned at that point about our debt. It was about $15 billion in debt. This is when Governor Gray Davis was governor before Arnold Schwarzenegger came in. We had just had an electricity problem, and we did not have a plan or a strategy for the future of California. Today, we actually have a greater amount of debt, and to my knowledge, we still don't have a blueprint for the future of the state. So any of you who want to work with me in Next 10 to create a vision for the state, something that I've been thinking about for many years, let me know afterwards. But anyway, we started, what Next 10 does is we commission expert research. We work in the area of the budget, infrastructure, the intersection of the environment and the economy. We founded the California Budget Challenge in 2005. Over 140,000 people have used the California Budget Challenge, and the California Budget Challenge is all about understanding trade-offs. There's a finite amount of money that we have to use in California, and what trade-offs are you going to make? And as we all know, budgets are about values and about priorities. We're excited to say that the cities of Oakland, San Francisco, and L.A. are using our platform to do their own California Budget Challenge. Also, we're about to unveil the third California Green Innovation Index. The California Green Innovation Index is actually about innovation in California and the different data points with the intersection between the economy and the environment as relates to AB 32. Last year, we expanded on this and created a special booklet called Many Shades of Green, which focuses on green businesses and green jobs in California. And just so you know, our audit, working with the California Collaborative Organization, we looked at green jobs, which are growing faster than other types of jobs in California, which was very interesting. So we have been a leader in California in many areas, particularly in the environment, specifically having to do with energy efficiency. However, in other areas, we have been lagging behind. As I said, we face a $20 billion budget deficit. And we have governance issues that, as David talked about, seem to be intractable. So that is what inspired Next 10, along with these three amazing California academic institutions, to start the California Choices, so that Californians will have a nonpartisan website to go to where we can look at the different initiatives that are unfolding in the state. And that's why we invited you all here today. This is kind of like a soft launch of California Choices. And if you go away with anything, any thought today, you'll go away with a lot of the thoughts because we have an esteemed panel here, and of course David and others. But the idea that we need to get the idea out and around California that we need to come together as a people to make the changes that need to be made. David described the crisis, and I think it's really us as the people that are going to be able to deal with this. I get discouraged some days, but I am an eternal optimist, and I truly believe that California in the next few years is going to find itself and go back to the path of glory that we once experienced in the state. So, as we said, we're going to have a field poll. We commissioned a field poll by Mark, looking at these very important governance issues. And right now, it's time for all of us to do the poll. And so, you should have these clickers. Does everybody have a clicker? This is the clicker right here. If you need a clicker, raise your hand. This is the interactive part of the program today. Okay, so so the way these clickers work, so you have the first one where it says one. So that corresponds to question one. This is very involving here. One is, so it's like one, two, three. So just do it that way. That's right. Right, Sarah?
Yeah. So we'll put up the question. No, you're going to read the question for you. As soon as the question's on the screen, vote at any time if you know the answer. You can change your mind. So now I'll throw up a timer. Just make sure your vote's locked in. And you'll have locked in your vote.
Okay, so here's the first question. Do you think how government works in California responds to the needs of people like you and your family? First, so A, yes, responds. B, no, does not respond. C, no option. So you got your clicker?
No opinion.
Sorry, no opinion. I got to go over here. Okay, so is everybody voting?
Mm-hmm. No. You don't, there's no need to point anywhere. Just lock in your vote and then
how many times can we vote?
This is it. It's right here. Wait a minute.
Attention, everybody else.
Are right.
You're good. This is a quick crowd here today.
That's the problem.
All right, you're good. Let's vote. Very good. We have a total of five questions, right, Mark?
Right.
All right, so we're most of the way through. Question four. The California state constitution requires a two-thirds vote of the state legislature to pass the state budget. Would you approve or disapprove of replacing the two-thirds vote requirement with a simple 50% majority vote for the state legislature to pass a budget? A, approve. B, disapprove. And C, no opinion. You guys all clear on that? All right, vote. Okay, last question, question five. The California State Constitution can be amended by placing an initiative on the statewide election ballot and obtaining a simple 50% majority of those voting in the election to approve the amendment. Would you approve or disapprove of replacing the 50% majority vote requirement with a two-thirds vote requirement for voters to pass constitutional amendments? A, approve. B, disapprove. C, no opinion. Okay, you all good to know? Okay, I'm not sure Mark DiCamillo needs any introduction. We've worked with Mark a number of times before. Mark has been doing polling in California for over 25 years, Mark? Or 30?
30 now.
50? No.
30.
Okay.
Not yet. Mervin Feel has been doing it for 60 years, and he's still kicking.
That's his mentor. But without further ado, we are honored to have Mark here today to bring us through this poll. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Neil. No. Okay, thank you. Basically, I'm going to go through those same questions and show you how the statewide voter public responded. But first, I'd like to just thank Noel and also our partners at the various academic institutions. This poll was truly a collaborative poll between all those entities. We came upon these questions collaboratively. We actually left a lot of questions, as you can imagine, on the cutting room floor, but we will hopefully be tracking these issues further as we move closer to the November general election as these issues become more salient. So let's go to the first slide. This will just tell you a little about the poll. Okay, this was actually the field poll is now engaging in multilingual surveys where we actually are teaming with New America Media, which is the largest collaborative of ethnic media in the state and actually in the nation. And they're helping us now in 2010 to actually move forward with our surveys in six languages. And so this survey was done in January 5th through the 17th, and the languages, and we interviewed over 1,200 registered voters, but it was done in English, Spanish, Cantonese, Mandarin, Korean, and Vietnamese. Now, beyond just the languages, we're actually trying to look at the opinions of some of the ethnic populations that really have not been examined very well in previous surveys because we just don't have enough of those respondents in a typical poll. So what we did in this survey and what we're planning to do in future surveys is to augment our statewide sample of registered voters with additional interviews in these ethnic populations. So for this survey, we augmented the sample with additional interviews with Chinese American voters, Korean American voters, Vietnamese American voters, and African American voters. And this enabled the survey to retrieve sample sizes of at least 100, but as many as 175 in the various ethnic population groups so that we could compare their opinions to the opinions of whites and Latinos, who obviously are represented in the sample quite well just on the regular survey. At the completion of interviewing, we do conduct a statistical weighting routine, which then returns these oversampled populations to their true population proportion so that the statewide numbers do reflect the total statewide registered voter population. Now, before I get to the five questions, I'd like to just set the stage of where we are in California on some of the opinions held by statewide voters. Next slide. This first slide shows a trend measure over the last 10 years of how Californians view the direction that the state is heading. Basically, the question is, do you believe the state is moving in the right direction, or do you believe the state is seriously off on the wrong track? And you can see that the survey results for the past year and a half, 2 years, it's been an overwhelming majority, over 70%, and in fact, in the January survey, it was 79% who said that the state is seriously off on the wrong track. Just 14% believe the state is moving in the right direction. If you compare that to previous measures throughout the decade, it even eclipses the period when we were going through the electricity crisis, and then that precipitated the recall of Governor Gray Davis. But we even have higher negatives for the direction of the state now than we did back then. Next slide. One of the major factors behind the public's mood, obviously the economy is lurking behind this whole thing, but the performance of the state legislature, we've been polling on the approval of the state legislature, the voter approval of the state legislature, for about 30 years. And we've never seen the kinds of negative responses that we've been getting in the past couple years. Over 70% of voters disapprove of the job the legislature is doing. In the January survey, it was 72%. Just 16% are saying they approve of the legislature. These are record low numbers for the state legislature. So you have to kind of keep that in mind that as you look at the rest of the findings, that this is the general backdrop that we're looking at when we're looking at these other questions. Okay, the next slide. So given that the voters really are not in a great mood when it views the direction of the state or how the legislature is doing, it's not surprising to me at all that when we ask the first question in your set here, does California government respond well to the needs of people like you and your family, most voters say no. 63% say no. 28% answered in the affirmative. The next slide shows some of the subgroups on this question. On the right-hand side are the responses of people who say, no, it does not respond well to the people like you and your family. On the left-hand side are the proportion who say, yes, it does. Majorities across Democrats, Republicans, and nonpartisans are saying that it doesn't respond well to themselves or their families. Republicans are most likely to say this, 74%. Nonpartisans, a little less likely, 54%, but still majorities are taking that view. If you look across the ethnic populations, the whites, the Latinos, the African Americans, and even the Chinese Americans hold similar views. Over 50% are saying that the state doesn't respond well. But it's interesting that in this question and in several others, the Korean Americans and in particularly the Vietnamese Americans are more likely to withhold their comment. They don't choose one or the other of the response categories. They take the no opinion option. So they appear to have somewhat less, smaller proportions saying the state doesn't respond well. But it's not because they're optimistic or they're just as the proportion saying yes, they do respond is comparable to the others. It's just they're more likely to withhold their opinion on this question. The next question, here we show the results on the issue of how would the state's voters prefer to close the $20 billion state budget deficit. And as you can see, the red shows the proportion, or the brown shows the proportion who would choose only through spending cuts, which is 31%, and then 19% mostly through spending cuts. And then if you look at the middle category, equal mix, 29% say spending cuts and tax increases. Very few voters, just 13%, say that they would prefer that the state's deficit be handled mostly or solely through tax increases. So voters are, that's their knee-jerk response, that they are not in the mood for a tax increase. Times are tough. I will, however, say that when we've polled on this issue many times, and in the recent polls that we've done, when you go further and you ask people, well, which programs would you like to cut? I'll go down the list of major state spending categories. The voters are unable to identify significant categories of state spending that they would like to cut. The most popular is the prisons, and I think the legislature is trying to do that right now with the governor. But they do not want to cut the biggest parts of the state's budget, which is the schools, higher education, and health care. These are overwhelming majorities. So what the voters have in mind, just if I can interject my interpretation, is they want to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. If the state could get rid of that department, we'd be much better off. But really, that's the public sees a lot of waste, and you continually read stories about abuses of the state's public's money. That's what the voters are thinking of when they're talking about just solely cutting the budget through spending cuts. Next slide. Let's look at the subgroups on this question. Republicans are most likely to be saying spending cuts, either mostly or only. That's what we're reporting on the right-hand side of this slide. On the left side is the proportion who say mostly or only tax increases. Republicans, 70% say mostly or only spending cuts. Just 4% would want only or mostly tax increases. But even Democrats, 36% say mostly or only spending cuts. Just 12% of Democrats say mostly or only tax increases. So tax increases just are not the first order of business. And if I were to advise the governor or the legislature, I'd do whatever I could to try to cut some waste, even though it's unlikely you're going to cut $20 billion of waste. I think the public really wants the legislature and the governor to move in that direction first before you start talking about tax increases. Next slide. Okay, here was the question on to deal with the state's major issues. Are fundamental changes to the state's constitution needed, or can this be done without changing the constitution if just lawmakers would work together and compromise? Here, even though our previous polls have shown that the public does support reforming the state's constitutions and making changes to it, if the legislature instead were to just be able to compromise and get things done, the public would rather proceed down that path rather than to go down the path of having to change the Constitution in a fundamental way. That's what the findings of this question are clearly showing. And on the next slide, we show the subgroups here, and there's very little difference, actually, by party. Democrats, Republicans, nonpartisans, very much likely to say that the legislature, if they could just get their act together to do this, that would be their preferred solution. If you look at the subgroups, most of the ethnic subgroups say this. The Vietnamese, again, are showing a somewhat less proportion, but most of that has to do with uncertainty and just withholding an opinion on that particular question. Next slide. Okay, then when we got to the two substantive proposals about changing the state's constitution, the first one is replacing the two-thirds majority vote requirement to pass a state budget in the state legislature with just a simple majority vote. Here you have voters dividing on this issue almost down the middle. 43% approve, 47% disapprove, and when you look at the next slide, you'll see why. This is a very partisan issue. If you're a Republican, you're basically looking at this as ceding the power and giving the power back to the Democrats. So a large majority of Republicans disapproves of this idea, 57% to just 31% of Republicans are in favor. The Democrats, however, are supportive of this idea of just proceeding with a simple majority vote to pass a budget. They favor it 54 to 38%. But interestingly to me, I always look at the nonpartisans as a group because they're independent of the two major party ties. Which way is the wind blowing in California? Well, the nonpartisans are pretty much against the idea, or at least they are opposed, 49 to 38%. And the reason for this, I think, is that voters really would like a bipartisan budget. They would rather not have a budget that is run or just rammed through by one party or the other, whichever party it might be. And I think nonpartisans are showing that opinion right there. Now, when you look at the ethnic populations, most of them are opposed. The white non-Hispanics opposed 49-43, Latinos 45-41 opposed, but African Americans much more likely to be in favor of this idea. They're a heavily Democratic constituency. They're supportive 64-33, so maybe that's not surprising. Chinese American voters are evenly split, 41% apiece. Korean Americans are opposed, 47% to 37%. And Vietnamese are split right down the middle among those taking an opinion, 32% to 30%. The next slide shows another proposal, which is to make the bar a little higher, set the bar a little higher for passing constitutional amendments in elections by voters. Here you see that a majority, 51% of voters, actually supports this idea. that perhaps we should make it a little more difficult for voters to change the state's constitution. Ron George, a Supreme Court Justice of the state of California, has been making this point in a number of his speeches, that the constitution is so cluttered now it's becoming difficult for the judiciary. Well, this kind of threshold, if you change the threshold of a passage of a constitutional amendment to a two-thirds majority, it certainly would reduce the number of constitutional amendments that would actually be approved. Very few of the constitutional amendments in the recent past would have gotten a 67% majority needed to pass it. And just the next slide shows the subgroups on this, which I think are interesting. Even though there aren't many differences, that's an interesting finding. They're really Democrats and Republicans and nonpartisans all take the view that they would support the idea of raising the bar a little for constitutional amendments to be approved by voters in an election. So with that, I will close, and I'll be interested to see how you all responded to the same questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, now we're going to see how you all compare with what Mark just spoke about. So is it on the screen?
Yep.
Okay, so the first question is California government response to the needs of families like you and your family. So on the left, we have that was Mark's poll on the left, and then what you all said. So you said, no, it doesn't respond by 83%. So I guess you're more disgruntled than the rest of California. Okay, yes. Okay. Here we go. Okay. To deal with the state's major issues or fundamental changes to the Constitution needed, or can this be done without changing? Because 75% said California said it could be done without it, but you said 65%. So I guess we have a crowd here that has a little bit different opinion. Next. Okay. How voted? Mark said 31% only through spending cuts, and 19 mostly through spending cuts, so about 50% saying, you know, through spending cuts. And what did you all say here? All right. Interesting. Most, so 30% of you said mostly through tax increases, and 11% only through, so much, okay, so people in this room are much more willing to pay taxes.
No.
All right.
That's not proper routine.
All right, that's what? All right, so this is the voter approval of constitutional amendments. Replace 50% majority with two-thirds vote supermajority. So as I see this, you're pretty similar to what they all said, right? The California said 51%, and you are all saying 48%. Well, this is very instructive. Thank you.
One comment.
We got to keep the program going.
Next time you do this, you should have the colors match.
All right. Suggestion taken. All right. So we're going to move along to the next part of the program. At this point, I would like to introduce Jack Citron from the University of California, Berkeley. He's a professor of political science. And Jack, I don't think, also, he doesn't need much of an introduction. He's been doing amazing work for the state of California, teaching classes and winning awards. And we are honored here today to have Jack be our moderator with our esteemed panel. And once again, I want to thank our panel for coming today. So without further ado, Jack, thank you very much.
Thank you, Noel, and thank you, David, for your work in putting together this consortium of academic institutions to work on this valuable project that we at the Institute of Governmental Studies at UC Berkeley have been involved in studying California government for many years, and it's great to have this opportunity to extend that work. I want to make a very couple of brief comments myself before turning to this distinguished panel. I just say a couple of things in listening and also in looking at these poll results. Robert Dahl, one of the most distinguished political scientists in the post-World War II era, once famously said, for most people, most of the times, politics is a sideshow in the circus of life. And I think one way of thinking about this effort is to at least temporarily move politics, at least the governance of California, into the main tent. Because one of the other issues, one of the other kind of aphorisms, which I attribute to myself, is because it's a subtitle of a book David Sears and I wrote about Proposition 13, the tax revolt, is people want something for nothing. And you saw that in Mark's poll results. And so part of the educational effort here is to get people to focus on the reality that, you know, you cannot have something for nothing for a long period of time. And then the final thing that my observation on this poll is actually, I think, is very valuable because it identifies to the extent that this is a representative body of people who are in the educated, politically active segment of the California electorate. Well, this is another example of really the disconnect between elite opinion and mass opinion. And I think this is something that when we interact with people like ourselves, we tend to overlook. But you overlook it at your risk because one thing is absolutely certain. One way of thinking about all of these reform efforts is that it's an effort to shift the pendulum of California governments from plebiscitary government back towards representative government. And so the people are going to decide which of these various measures that is being proposed passed. There's no way around that. And therefore, you have to be able to frame an argument in which the advocacy of reform is not associated with a point of view that is remote from the lives of ordinary Californians. And I think that's one of the issues that this panel will address. One last comment. It is actually, we know, very easy to amend the California Constitution. And I'm surprised that more of you didn't want to make it much tougher. It's very unusual, any system of government, for the Constitution to be amended more easily than any simple legislation can be passed. It's bizarre, actually, when you think about it. And as a result of the ease of California's Constitution being amended, the document now, in the latest book that I saw, is 169 pages long. And I will bet you that there is no person living or dead who has ever read the entire California Constitution. Okay? And if you can find me one such individual between now and May 17th, when we have our graduation at Cal, I will give them a PhD in political science. Okay? And it's absurd to have a constitutional document that no one can read and no one can understand. Having said that, let me turn to the people who have been working on this problem and know it much better. And the speakers are going to go in order from Senator Maldonado on. And I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on the bios, which are, I think, everyone has a copy. But I'm going to highlight for each individual first. I'll go down the list and then they can start speaking, some of the highlights. Well, we know that Senator Maldonado, member of the State Senate, and also previously served as a member of the State Assembly and also the mayor of the city of Santa Maria. And through, just say this, and I think this, we can say this with complete confidence, that throughout his Assembly and Senate career, Senator Maldonado has continued to advocate for government reform and fiscal accountability and responsibility. And so he's a perfect speaker for this particular topic. Next is Lenny Mendonca. And Lenny has had a, if you read his biography, it's got multiple elements of great interest and diversity, but he is a director of the San Francisco office of McKinsey and Company, and he has been director of their communications effort there, including the invaluable McKinsey Quarterly. He also has served as president emeritus of the Bay Area Council, which is an organization, as you know, instrumental in this government reform effort. It's not on his vita, but the most important thing he's done last 10 years, as far as I'm concerned, is allow my daughter to have a job at McKinsey for a couple of years. okay. I think next to Lenny is Sunny McPeak, who's had an incredible career in both the private and public sector. She is now president and CEO of the California Emerging Technology Fund, which is a statewide nonprofit organization aiming to close the digital divide. Before that, she served for 3 years as Secretary of the California Business Transportation Housing Agency under Governor Schwarzenegger. Before that, she was President CEO of the Bay Area Council, and before that, and living next door to Contra Costa County, you see her name very, very often as the member of the county Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors. I think next to Sunny is another person whose name ends with M, Chris McKenzie. And Chris was appointed in 1999 as executive director of the 112-year-old League of California Cities. This is the private nonprofit corporation that advocates for cities before the legislature, governor, and federal and state courts, as well as statewide ballot measure elections. And it's a very important source of information for voters about how these particular measures affect them. Okay. Next to Chris is Annette Fuentes, and I will have to get to the right page here. Excuse me for 1 second. Annette is managing editor for New American Media, which is a nonprofit online news service with a predominantly ethnic and immigrant news media audience. These are audiences that we know are growing and in the state of California and instrumental for the future direction of the state. So this is a very important new effort. And finally, next to Annette is Roy Ulrich. And Roy also has multiple careers. He's a lawyer. He runs probably the best public affairs radio show that I have ever been on in Los Angeles. And he has been, he's on the board of the California Tax Foundation, and he's been centrally involved in drafting and preparing initiatives for organizations throughout the state. And I'm proud to say that Roy is now a visiting scholar at the Institute of Governmental Studies at Berkeley. So I hope I didn't miss out some important facts, but we now want to hear from each of you. And we are going to begin with Senator Maldonado. And I hope you can observe the five-minute rule because we want to give people an opportunity to ask questions.
Well, thank you very much. And it's great to be here. And Noel, thank you for all the work. And Mark, thank you for all the work that you've done. I'm standing here in front of a group where they've just said that 72% of what I do isn't doing a good job. So I got to tell you, it's a difficult position to be in. But I must tell you that of all the members that I serve with in the legislature, and I'm a senior member in the House, believe it or not, I've been there for 11 years, I've been one of the few that has never allowed partisan politics to get in the way of what's good for California. And that's what's breaking my state today. That's what's hurting my state today, because everything is personal in Sacramento. It's personal, and it is political. And I'm telling you this because I live it every day. And last year, we know what happened. We had a huge budget crisis. and we did the mixture that you talked about here today. We did. We had a $62 billion solution. What did we do? We raised some revenues, we cut some programs, and we borrowed. And when you do the three things, you manage to upset everybody. And that's kind of what happened. But we did one thing that people aren't used to do under the election process that we have today. It's called governing. And governing is hard, because when you govern, you make people upset. And under the system that we have today in Sacramento, it's easy to say no on one side and it's easy to say yes on the other. And you know that you're guaranteed an election, because under the election process that we have in place in California and under the redistricting system that we have in place in California, it's easy to vote no on one side of the aisle and get reelected and never have to worry about it, and easy to say yes. Now, I saw a slide that said, do the legislators adhere to the people's needs? We saw, I think it was 70, I don't remember what the number was, but it was a huge number that said no. I guess the next question would be is, do politicians adhere to party bosses? I would venture to say that that number would be very, very high. And I'm standing here before you today with a passion to reforming California, because I love California. It is the golden state. It is the best state in the nation, with a broken election system that creates chaos, dysfunction, and, to be frank with you, embarrassment. Because for the life of me, as a state senator in California, I'm sleeping under my desk at 4 in the morning trying to cast a vote, because we can't come together. Because under the system that we have in place, you have to go ask people if it's okay to vote that way, instead of asking the people that put you in office. And that's the problem. So I've done this thing called the open primary. And I got to share something with you. I'm getting beat up from both sides. But it's okay, because I believe that the open primary is about 65 to 70% of the fix that we need. I think reapportionment is probably 20%, and who knows what else we need down the road. But the open primary is going to do one thing, I believe. I believe that it will change the behavior of the legislature. Not on all the votes, but just on a couple of them. And that's all I want. We're still going to have Latino, non-Latino, African-American, gay, straight. We're going to have, the legislature is going to look like the way we look today. But I want to change the behavior of that building. And I think that this open primary will, because we've had it before. And I was elected in 1998 in an open primary. And in 1998, we had more diversity in the Republican Party under the open primary. We had four Latinos. Now the open primary's gone away. You're looking at the last one. I feel like a leprechaun. We know they exist. We've just never seen them. But I'll just share this with you. I believe, and I'll just put it this way to you. If you like what we have today, then you need to vote no on Proposition 14. But if you really believe that California's got better days ahead, and we're going to do it like we said here, that if we can do it in the legislature, I believe Proposition 14 will change, and I'll tell you why. Because I believe there's more dysfunction in Sacramento than there is at the school board that this man stood up and said, I serve on the school board. Because in this school board, they don't get up and they say, we're going to go to a closed session and say, you know what? We're going to fix this because this is where our voters live. Or we're going to fix that because this is where Democrats live. They go into those closed sessions, they do what's right for their school district in that area. And they move on. We don't. We get stuck in this thing called politics. The personalization of politics. And last year, there was a budget that I didn't like, but we governed. So I asked for an open primary because I did not want to put resources into a flawed system. And I believe that the open primary will change California. And I know I got about a minute or two left, or a minute. Just in closing, the initiative process must be reformed. It's becoming a business, if you think about it. I mean, if you have an idea, let's just use stem cell research. I'm sure somebody wanted to fund stem cell research for a loved one or for somebody, which I supported, by the way. But some consultant probably went to that person and said, you know what, if you, instead of putting up a half, $500 million for research, why don't you put up $5 million? And we'll go ask the taxpayer for $3 billion. I'll make money by running the campaign. They'll make money by gathering signatures. This person will make money by cutting the ads for $5-6 million, and you get $3 billion because it's a feel-good initiative, and the voters will pass it. So I think the first thing we need to do in the initiative process is that if you're going to put an initiative on the ballot, it has to have funding attached to it. It can't come from the general fund, and that will reform it. So I'll just leave you with this. I see better days in California. I really do. The numbers in January, whether you, you know, I don't know if people have known this, they were up by $400 million in sales, $1 billion in January. I see better days, and we're going to get there. And all I ask of the people of California is that we reform this great state so when it gets better, we have a rainy day fund in place. We have a tax system in place where it doesn't give us spikes and valleys. We can have ongoing increases. Spending can increase like this instead of this way and this way. And just in closing, under the system that we have today, I just want to share this with you because I've lived it. Under the system that we have today, the election process, the legislature recalled for the first time in the history of California a sitting governor because it didn't want to work with him. This legislature has caused a lot of grief to this sitting governor, and I can guarantee that this, if we don't reform it, the next legislature will cause a lot of grief to the next governor, and we're never going to be on our way. So I ask you to join me, and please go out there and talk about Proposition 14. I believe it'll save California.
Thank you. I think one thing we neglected to say is that between speakers.
In the State Assembly representing Marin and Sonoma, now teaching public policy here at Stanford. Having spent those 6 years in the State Assembly, I know how broken the system is. We have a budget process that doesn't work. We have a budget that's out of whack by about $20 billion this year. We have a correction system that is very dysfunctional, like the legislature, ironically. And we have schools that continue to underperform. And if you look across virtually every critical issue, the legislature's failed, I think in part because we have a constitution that doesn't work anymore. It's been amended so many times. We've had so many initiatives that have been pushed through that we now have a system that just doesn't function. I don't think the legislature can reform itself. I think it has to come from the outside. And so I support a convention. The question is what the process should be to on the path to that convention. But if you get people from the outside who don't have those same special interests backing them, we might actually have a chance to make California work again.
Okay. Thank you. Lenny, please. Okay. I think between each speech, we're going to have a little blurb.
Thank you. I will attempt to be brief here so we have enough time to get through everyone and have some Q&A. But I'd also like to thank Noel and California Choices and all of what you've been doing to try and help encourage a thoughtful conversation across the state, and also the Commonwealth Club of being a place where that conversation has happened for decades. It was actually the place where the initiative process in the first instance and the progressive reforms in California started out of a conversation at the Commonwealth Club. So there's a great tradition in this state of actually finding problems and figuring out how to solve them. And we can do this for this problem as well. And lastly, I'd like to thank my fellow California former farmer, Senator Maldonado, for all of what he does. He has the most difficult job of all of us, and I don't mean trying to be lieutenant governor. I mean his job as a legislator in the state of California, because he is stuck in a system that doesn't work. And as when you have terrific elected officials that we're all excited to be part of that system, and they can't get the job done, shame on us, not shame on them. So the opportunity for us, I think, is to fix that system. And I want to talk just for a minute about one of the ways that I think is an important mechanism about how that can be done, and that's a limited constitutional convention. The Bay Area Council, who we talked about earlier, which I chaired until last year, helped put this discussion forward in an editorial in the San Francisco Chronicle that our CEO, Jim Wunderman, wrote. And it wasn't because the Bay Area Council wants to be in the governance reform business. We're actually in the business of trying to encourage progress on all the issues that David mentioned earlier that are facing the state, the economy, water, infrastructure more generally, education, health care. But none of those are making progress because we have a broken governance system. And so what we, after a whole series of research, concluded that one important element that will be necessary, could be necessary to help push this forward, was a limited constitutional convention. What we've got proposed is two ballot initiatives, the first one that would enable citizens to call a constitutional convention. Today, the only way a convention can be called in the state of California is by a two-thirds vote of the legislature, and that is not going to happen. So the first step is to enable citizens to be able to have the opportunity to call a convention. The first proposition that the Attorney General has given language back for would enable that to happen if one hasn't happened in the last 10 years, and would also require that it be specified about what would be considered in that convention. The second proposition would call it. It would call it and specify the delegate selection process, specify the set of issues to be called, specify the timing, and fund it. The current proposition would have that occur in 2011 and be back on the ballot for approval again in an integrated way in 2012. The reason that we're trying to encourage that process is for three reasons that I think are fundamental. The first one is that it might actually work. You know, surprise, surprise, this is a man-made problem of a set of things that we've put on ourselves. It might actually be helpful to take a look at that and step back and say, if we have a linear program with too many constraints, maybe we should remove some of those and think about it in an integrated way. Today, initiatives by law can only be single purpose, so you can't have an integrated solution presented as a yes-no, like Congress did when we were looking at the Base Closure Commission, or the Social Security Reform Commission did a while ago when Greenspan and others chaired a group that said, here's what we should do in an integrated way, do you want it or not? The only way that can happen today is through a constitutional convention. Second, and importantly, even if it doesn't work, and even if it doesn't go on the ballot, it is enormous voice and pressure for reform. And so one of the most important things that I think is necessary is that we keep this conversation going. Whether we have a convention or not, I would just assume we didn't have one. I actually, on the question that said, do we need major constitutional reform or could it work if legislatures got together and made it work, I actually voted yes on both of those, but it wouldn't work in the poll. Because the answer is, if the legislature could come together in a way that Senator Maldonado was describing and put an integrated package together, we might be able to do it. But if we don't, we need the outside pressure to ensure it happens. And last and perhaps most importantly, I think it's important that we have a constructive narrative that describes that California can be fixed. This is, as I said, a set of problems of our own making. We cannot be going around the rest of the world and having everyone call California the failed state. We're the golden state. We're the place that people come when they're looking for innovative solutions. And if we don't innovate our way out of describing what the next generation of representative democracy is going to look like in the internet age, who's going to do it? So we need to have the possibility that it might work. We need to have the pressure, and we need to have the positive narrative. Lastly, just a personal note on why I think this is important. I, on one side of my family, am a fifth-generation Californian. My grandparents on one side came here as a whaler and a fisherman, and my mother's side came here in the Dust Bowl as farmers. I have daughters who went through the public education system and are still in it today. By the time they have grandkids, it'll be the seventh generation of Californians in my family. And I don't want my grandkids to say, my grandfather was part of the problem. I want them to say he was part of the solution. So thank you all for being part of the solution.
Hi, my name is Ashley Menzies, and I'm a junior political science major at Stanford University. I believe the California constitutional system needs reform, specifically because of the proposition system. I don't understand how one day a homosexual couple can be married, but then the next they're not allowed to due to the proposition system and due to the tyranny of the majority. I also don't understand how people can vote for something on the ballot in which the California state does not have the financial means to do so. I really think this form of direct democracy needs reform now.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you. And I think if it's okay with you, I will just sit here. It's easier to continue down the table here. I do think, Jack, you might have to award a PhD to Lenny. I think he may have read the 75,000 words. And I will tell you, I was really surprised to be educated by Repair California and Lenny that there's only 75,000 words in the state constitution. I would have guessed it to be actually a lot more. I am here actually representing California Forward, that is another reform effort that major foundations have supported. But I'm a fan of Repair California and Lenny's leadership and what they have done to spark a responsive chord with Californians who, at least all of us learned, I think, in fourth and fifth grade that the major document of any government is a constitution, and we think everything's so broke that we must need to have a new constitution. I mean, I think that's actually sort of why there's been such a great positive outpouring. And California Forward has advanced a couple of measures. I'm going to talk about them. But I will also say that I'm struck by two things. One was testifying before the legislature last year, Senator Maldonado and his colleagues. I made the statement, others have made it too, but I said California is not only broke, it is broken. And that got picked up by a number of newspapers, and there were editorials. What was surprising to me is I first said that at a Pat Brown Institute in 1983. So for me, the wheels have been coming off this state for a long time, and the seeds of the crisis have been sown for three decades. Also, as I observed the process in Sacramento, and I've been on the outside, on the inside, trying to get on the inside and to change the whole system, it is striking that the way the legislative process works, people think you can pass a law, sign it, or pass legislation, sign it into law, and the job's done. Absolutely not. Governing is actually doing the hard work of implementing. You would be surprised at how many legislators think that they solved the water problem because they passed four bills, notwithstanding that there is going to be a general obligation measure on the ballot in November. And I've spent 35 years plus on that measure or that issue. It's actually very solvable. And I probably spend more time listening to Californians than most people who have been in government. And there is remarkable consensus among Californians about what needs to be done. There's almost consensus about how to do it. The problem is that we end up with these very false choices, such as cutting spending or taxes, and that presumes that the system works today at all. It does not. Taxpayers are getting a pretty bad deal for what you're paying, and at the same time, we're not making enough investment in things such as education and infrastructure, but the way we're spending the money, the way it gets used, is totally, totally not going to get the job done. So I could elaborate, but a starting place for California Forward is to look at budget reform. And there will be a measure, if we can advance to signature gathering, and I hope that the signature gathering for Repair California and the Constitutional Convention also gets jump-started again. But if we can do that, because that is a great pressure on getting the dialogue among the legislators and the special interest and people in Sacramento to maybe move to action. Here's what budget reform is being advanced, and you would hopefully have a vote on in the future. Pretty simple, because California Forward has the tenets of we need to have accountability in government, so actually budget to outcomes. We need to move government closer to people. Cities, counties need to have dedicated revenue streams that don't get raided by the state in return for accountability and outcomes and reforming the way that they operate. And I'm an old county person. I'm looking at Chris as the new city person. And he's gotten pretty gray trying to do this work, too. We need to actually invest in the future. That's a principle of California Forward, and actually have a vibrant democracy like all of you here in this room. So the kind of measure for budget reform that California Forward has advanced would do the following. It would require a 2-year budget and a 5-year forecast, trying to manage the looking ahead at money that might come in and doing a better job of investing it. It would require that one-time monies be spent on one-time expenditures with a priority on debt reduction. It would require every element of government to every department, every agency, to actually state the outcomes. Results-oriented government, so that you as taxpayers would know what you're spending money on, what kind of return you're getting, and is there a better way to get the same kind of outcome. It would actually change the voter threshold from 2/3 to a simple majority for the budget as a part of this package. I was like the last person of California Forward to sign off on that because I resisted changing from 2/3 budget threshold because I didn't want to make it easier to get to a bad budget. And I haven't seen, with all due respect to the legislature and the governor, a good budget in about 5 years. And lastly, the measure would require the legislature and the governor to forfeit their salary, not just defer it, forfeit their salary for every day that they didn't get the budget done on time. Now, that's the one that drives them the craziest in Sacramento, is literally they might have to give up money. So that's the kind of measure that California Forward is going to try to get signatures around. I, too, am very hopeful about California, listening to Californians, because I know what Californians can do. I know what California can be. And with those of you in the room caring, I'm absolutely certain we can get the job done.
My name is Kevin Elliott with Roll Construction here in San Diego, California. And why does reforming government matter to me and our company? Well, the main reason is because I feel that government in Sacramento is dysfunctional and the environment is extremely toxic and that they are overreaching in their objectives, including trying to provide social engineering through legislation that discounts common business sense and common sense in general. There's too much political pressure and special interest group pressure driving what goes on in Sacramento, and the politicians don't know how to respond to that for the taxpayers. They know how to respond to it for their re-elections. The end result of all of this is that business is not thriving in California, and businesses are leaving California. Businesses are what provides growth and jobs for Californians, and we need that to come back.
Hi, thanks very much. I'm Chris McKenzie. I represent about 3,000 elected city officials across our state. Now, the senator is a member of a body of 40 senators. The assembly has 80 assembly members, and we have one governor. Moreover, there are about 7,800 elected city, county, and school officials in our state. Now, if you stop for a minute and you think about some other states and how they're organized, I think in New Hampshire, their state legislature has about half the people in the state in it. And they have endless conversations, but I think good conversations. In other New England states, we have town hall meetings. I came here over 10 years ago from a Midwestern state and discovered there are fewer state legislators in California than there were in my state. And that state has about 2 million people. The scale at which we try to conduct state government in this state is mind-boggling. And I would submit to you and our and my fellow distinguished panelists, they're distinguished, I'm not, that probably the only authentic conversation we have about government in our state occurs at the community level. Now, that is not to condemn the state leaders who are trying day in and day out to work in a system that I can only compare to an existential play. I mean, I keep thinking of Jean-Paul Sartre's play, No Exit, or Waiting for Godot. And you go into these committee hearings, and you're just astounded because, quite frankly, nobody really listens to each other. The only goal is to get the hearing over, And people are amazed at how they're treated when they're in there. And the people who are running the meeting are good people. So we do have a system that is fundamentally difficult. But I think we need to remember part of our heritage here. We are a people who are suspicious of government for good reason. We threw off the shackles of a foreign government over 200 years ago, and we have designed a government that is not supposed to be efficient. In many ways, it is almost impossible for it to be responsive unless it is small and can change quickly. Now, our state constitution, if you are intimidated by our constitution, just look at our code of statutes. And if you think anybody knows what the laws of our state are on any given day and comply with all of them, I'll give you a PhD. But it is an extremely complex system that we have. Our solution to problems in Sacramento is to pass a new law. I mean, we have over 1,000 new bills that have been introduced. Legislators take credit for passing bills. And most of them, quite frankly, are not going to change your and my life. But when you think about where we encounter government, some of you, like me, came here on BART today. That's run by a multi-county transit agency that has an elected board. You walk down a city street or a county, you came on a county road, you went over bridges that are maintained by your local government or your state government transportation agency. You were protected by police that are largely a local presence and locally funded. These services, and by the way, the water we're drinking, as our utility friends will remind me, come out of a local utility system that depends on the state water project in many cases to work across our state. So there are tremendous interconnections here. But we're a state where that conversation, I sincerely believe, is the most authentic at the local level. And, in fact, if you look at the track record we've had of success with local tax measures and local ballot measures concerning bonds, and I'm glad my school colleagues here, because the schools have led the way in many of this, but cities are, counties are. Do you know in the midst of this recession, we're passing more than half of these measures, many of them two-thirds vote measures? The electorate is reinvesting in their community government. At the same time, they are distancing themselves from their state government. Now, I don't want to say that local elected officials are better. I think they have a real advantage. They get to talk to somebody in the grocery store while their ice cream is melting. This is the joke elected officials have at the local level. They catch you in the grocery store and they talk to you about what's on their mind and you can't get away and your spouse is trying to get you to come home. This is the nature of the conversation. And this is what, quite frankly, leads to change in local government. It is that conversation. That conversation, in my opinion, is not happening. It's extremely difficult to happen at the state level. But let me go back to the numbers for you. You got 3,000 elected officials. You've got 7,800, or let's say 8,000 local elected officials, 121 state elected officials. Where's that connection occurring? What can those local elected officials do to help transform our system? And I think you can begin to see that there is tremendous power in how those levels of government work together and how those elected officials talk to each other. But right now, I work for 3,000 elected city officials who are extremely angry, and they're extremely frightened. They're dealing with plummeting revenues, and they're facing a state government that wants to take more of their plummeting revenues to finance its operations. And they know that is the first thing that they have to deal with. But last summer, along with our school and county colleagues, we came together and sponsored a summit on the whole governance challenge facing our state. Unanimous agreement on the fact the state is broken. The first thing they said we need to do is protect local revenues from state intrusion and raids and loans, because we can't field those police, we can't put out your fires, we can't deliver your other services if the state has taken the funds away. We can't maintain your street lights, which are at risk at times, if the state has taken those funds. The second thing we need to do is look at things like the two-thirds vote rule, look at term limits, look at other governance issues. So they very much want to be part of this dialogue about transforming our system. The ballot measure that we're co-sponsoring with some other groups right now will protect local revenues from state raids. In fact, sort of reinstates about a 75-year-old doctrine, I would submit, called the separation of sources rule. When our system made much more sense, when people knew who to hold accountable for how government money was being spent. We're in the process of qualifying the measure for the ballot, and it will hopefully be on the November ballot. But the job's not done. And I just want to say that our second and priority is to be, after we pass that measure, is to be very much part of this dialogue about how to build a much stronger state government, our most important partner in this system, and to get jobs, as the senator said, back. We can't have a thriving government if we don't have revenues produced by a thriving economy. The reality is, folks, we won't have a revenue problem if we've got a growing economy. And we don't have that today. You know that, and I know that. So we all need to put aside our differences and find a way to restart our economy and to make sure it sustains the government we want and we need to have. So I look forward to hearing the other comments and to hearing from you. Thank you.
I'm Michelle Liu. I'm president and CEO of Asian Americans for Community Involvement, ACCI. We're a large nonprofit organization focused on health and human services, mostly for Asian immigrants. Reform in California is something that we're passionate about because we see people who rely on California government every day. It's the mom who isn't feeling well and she comes to our medical clinic because that's a place where she can see a doctor who speaks her language and will treat her regardless of her insurance status. If that mom has a father who's a senior, he can come to our senior center, which is government funded, and he can get a hot lunch and socialize with other folks his age. And if that mom has a daughter who's getting good grades in high school and wants to pursue higher education, we see that that daughter may need a Cal Grant or funding from our state to be able to go to a UC or a CSU campus. In these tough times, we're seeing more people in need, and we want to make sure that the California government supports all of their efforts.
Good morning. My name is Annette Fuentes, and I'm the managing editor of New America Media. We're an internet-based news service. We've been around for about 10 years now. And we are not only a voice for the ethnic and immigrant news media, but we are content producers. We're journalists out there trying to translate complicated but really critically important public policy issues into the kinds of news stories that will inform people. And I'm sitting here, I'm like a kid in a candy store because there are so many good stories that I've heard, so many good ideas that I can go back to my office and start writing about. I'm thinking of doing an interview with Senator Maldonado on his proposal. A lot of good stories. But it's really a challenge. It's a challenge to translate arcane public policy ideas and the notions of creating a new constitution, amending a constitution. How do we translate these things as journalists into stories that people will read, will comprehend, and will be able to act on? It's more than news that you can use. We have to reach into California's increasingly diverse communities. And I think any discussion, as we're having today, needs to include this very basic fact, which is that a couple of years ago, California went from being a majority white to a majority minority state. That's something that we need to keep in our minds whenever we're discussing public policy issues like this, like reforming government. It matters because we are, while one state, we're a diverse state with diverse social, cultural, and economic backgrounds. That's why what Mark Field and Mark DiCamillo in the Field Poll has done is so critically important. NAM partnered up with Field Poll, as Mark has explained, back in January to do the first ever multilingual poll. For the first time, we could actually get information about what so many different California communities think about things. And while we share commonalities in many respects, there are also subtle and not so subtle differences. For example, I was fascinated in this latest round of polling done with this consortium to find out that African Americans were the one group that by, I think, 63% thought that it would be a good idea to change the two-thirds vote requirement to pass a budget. I mean, that's a significant difference compared to all the other groups whites and every other ethnic group that was polled. It suggests that for reforms to take place, that this is a community that not only should be but can be engaged on this reform possibility. They are receptive to that idea. The field polled survey findings offered really a treasure trove of other fascinating things that, you know, from an anthropological point of view, you might say this is really interesting, but also from a reform, a governance reform point of view, are very important. If we're going to make changes to government, we need to be able to engage people where they are. For a lot of ethnic communities, Vietnamese American, Chinese American, the ethnic media is really plays a critical role. That means that folks get up, they get their newspaper in their local store, and they read that in the morning. That's where they get their news. That's where they get their information about what's going on in their communities and also what's going on in their state. That's why it behooves us as journalists, me, and us as policy experts, policy wonks, would-be reformers, engaged citizens, to reach out to these communities. It's great to have this kind of a forum. We're all policy wonks here. We're people who care about these issues and are coming with a certain basic level of understanding and commitment to reform. But it's not going to be enough unless we engage the diverse communities that are most impacted. Although the electorate, the field poll, of course, is surveys of registered voters, although the electorate itself is not representative of the of California's population, that's changing. Asian Americans are becoming registered to vote at a very fast rate, and that's going to happen with every group in the country. We also, it behooves us to push for people to register to vote so that they can become engaged in this process. And just one final thing as the clock ticks, I was also really interested to see that taxation as a way, partial or more than halfway out of the budget deficit, was not anathema to everybody, because I think we're going to have to face the fact that taxation will have to play a role. It's who gets taxed, how the taxes are done, that may be at issue. But in communities around the state, people are paying passive kinds of taxes when they see their parking meter hours are extended, as happened in Oakland. There are backdoor taxes that are taking place, but they're not taxes that people necessarily have a voice in voting on or deciding whether that happens. So I was very heartened to see that, especially among Latinos and African Americans, the idea of taxation as at least a partial way to get out of the budget crisis is something that people will consider. So maybe taxes aren't quite as toxic as everybody presumes. And we should also remember that the rate of taxation was much higher in this state several decades ago. So we're not really increasing. We perhaps have to go back to where things were before Prop 13. Clearly, despite the diversity, there are great commonalities that unite everybody in this state across all racial and ethnic lines. And I think education is that thing that links everybody, whether it's higher education in the dismal condition of community colleges and the public university system or the K through 12 public school system. California ranks 48. Everyone's talked about the failing state, and the statistic that really grabs me is that the Golden State ranks 48 in terms of per-student spending out of all states in the union. And if we can fix even that statistic and bring our public schools back to where they once were, that will be the proudest accomplishment of all. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Renee Crawford. I am a first-year student at UC Berkeley. I am from San Diego, California. I am also a first-generation college student, so I'm really grateful to be afforded the opportunity to go to college, something my parents weren't able to do. Only problem right now that really concerns me with the California Constitution is the lack of funding that's being given to students. Our fees went greatly increased this year, and it's going to be for the next couple of years. And so since this becomes a problem for me, because I have to pay for my own college personally, I'm currently doing our work-study program, and I will probably continue to be doing it the whole time I'm here at Berkeley. I also have applied for private scholarships, so while it's manageable to pay for my college education, it's a lot more difficult, especially with the fact that Cal Grants are going to be taken away from us next year. So this just is a really important issue to me because it greatly affects my life here.
Roy? Good morning. It's still morning. My name's Roy Ulrich. I'm with California Common Cause. Just to give you a sample of how messed up our initiative system is, this June there are going to be four measures on the ballot. Two of them were brought to you by the legislature. One is Senator Maldonado's proposal. The other is Proposition 15, which would create a public financing mechanism for the Secretary of State's office on an experimental basis. This is something Common Cause has pushed. The measure was authored by Senator Hancock from Berkeley. It went through the legislature and is going to be on the ballot in June, and I urge all of you to vote for it. The other two measures on the ballot, interestingly enough, are measures brought to you by, one is brought to you by Mercury Insurance, trying to overturn parts of Proposition 103, and the other affects you here in the Bay Area. It's from PG&E, and it would affect the ability to create municipal power districts. Both of these were put on the ballot by these two huge corporations. They didn't need any help. They didn't have voluntary signature gatherers. They paid to put this measure on the ballot, and they will no doubt spend lots of money to pass both of these measures or to attempt to pass both of these measures unless voters become aware of the dangers of passing them. It is unfortunate that today the efforts of the two organizations represented here up on the podium are floundering. Both California Forward and the efforts of Repair California are in need of a golden goose, are in need of someone here to come forward and put money into these important measures. And that's because we've had a difficulty. There are all these wonderful ideas, but it takes money to put measures on the ballot in California. Now, this is going to change. And not because of anybody thinking outside the box in terms of governance, but because of technology. There is a firm in California today that wants to allow you through your smartphones to sign a petition to put a measure on the ballot. Now, this would mean, if nothing changes and they are allowed to do that, that instead of looking at perhaps 10 measures on any ballot, you'd be looking at 50 or 60 measures on a ballot. So there's going to have to be a change in how we do our initiative process here in California, whether we like it or not. It's being forced upon us by technology, not because of our disgruntlement with the initiative process itself. Because unless the thresholds for qualifying increase, or we limit the numbers that appear on the ballot, this is going to pose a problem to California. Now, at the current time, efforts to qualify an initiative using Vera Firma's technology are on hold and probably will stay on hold. But you can be sure that sometime in the not-too-distant future, Californians will, in fact, be able to sign petitions using this process. Now, we at Common Cause have several reforms that we've proposed to reform the initiative process. You've heard some of them today. You can see some other reforms for the initiative process that have been proposed by the Center for Governmental Studies, which is at cgs.org. There's a nice executive summary that's rather short, and you can see some of the important changes that the Center and Common Cause would like to see to the initiative process in California. Unfortunately, anything major to change the initiative process in California is, guess what, going to have to be done by an initiative. We have also proposed, most recently, for California Common Cause has to create a new revision commission. We have had revision commissions in California in the past. Some have been successful, some not so much, but we think it's important that a revision commission be established. Now, of course, the legislature is supposed to create a revision commission. That's in the most perfect world. But with the efforts, unfortunately, of the two major organizations sitting up here, of California Forward and the Repair California is sort of floundering, there's less pressure today on the legislature to do something on their own because they don't see the Constitutional Convention or the efforts of California forward being able to move forward. So I think it's really important, and I think my major pitch of this morning is we need to get both of these organizations back up and running to the point they are able to qualify measures to the ballot. That's the only way the legislature is going to be pressured. I also want to close briefly by saying that one of our reforms is to require that initiative constitutional amendments appear on the November ballot. The fifth poll question we asked, I was concerned about it, I have to say, for one reason. If Ron George, our Chief Justice, thinks there's a lot of clutter in our Constitution, and you can be sure there is. No, Jack, I haven't read it all, unfortunately, but there is a lot of clutter in our Constitution. And the reality is that the way the question was posed, to remove the clutter would require a supermajority vote. So I'm not in favor of that. I want to make sure that the clutter is removed by majority vote, and if we need some supermajority in the future to put new things in our Constitution, that can perhaps require a supermajority vote. We'd also like to see measures that require a two-thirds vote in their body, like Proposition 13 did. It required a two-thirds vote of the legislature to raise taxes. Well, measures require having in their four corners a two-thirds vote should have to pass by a two-thirds vote. So these are some of the reforms that Common Cause has proposed, and I look forward to hearing from you as the morning progresses. Thank you.
I want to thank all the panelists. We're only 2 minutes behind Noel's schedule, which is not bad, I think, and everyone. But I think that, you know, we want to hear from all these panelists. So I'm going to be a little draconian here when you ask the questions. No speeches. Just the question, brief, succinct, economy of expression question, and you can direct it at any member of the panel you want, and we'll get as much feedback as possible in the next 20 minutes. Sir.
This would be a question for Sunny. I like the idea of California Forward suggesting budgeting by outcomes. What would be the outcomes you would suggest for the prison system, which is the one that probably is failing us the most in terms of the amount of money we're putting in and what we're getting out of it?
Well, it's a great question, and it's the third big bucket that David talked about in the general fund. I would actually start with at the local level that we have fewer people going to prison. I mean, the problems that we have with the growing prison population in at the state level is we got failure in the first two buckets of the educational system and of the health and welfare system. So if we were to take this outcome focused, results-oriented government to the place where it should begin, as close to the people as you can get, then you start with children being able to learn and thrive, not getting into gangs, etc. For the prison system itself, how many people do you not have coming back? The first thing, when you got 70% recidivism, that's failure. It is the largest employer of any of the departments or agencies. I ran the $11 billion BT&H with 42,000 employees, and the sad commentary is there's 56,000 employees sitting there at the Department of Corrections, an indictment of failure in California.
And everybody, just as you're raising your hands, Noel Perry and David Kennedy and Mark DiCamillo are also available to take some questions, too.
Sir. Yes.
I'm Pete Williams, retired. Many people feel that we don't want to make it easier for the legislature to raise taxes. However, this annual budget thing is such a mess. Would it be possible to say we can pass the budget with majority rule as long as it doesn't include any new taxes?
Pete, that actually is the proposal of budget reform that California Forward has put forward. The two-thirds requirement for taxes would remain in place, and there are those who criticize that. It would simply be the two-thirds change in adopting the budget that is being advanced through California Forward.
Fred.
Sonny, following up on that prison situation, do you see the mental health system and the failure to treat people as funneling at least 20% of the population into that prison system, and how do you expect not to have recidivism when those people are not treated before they come out?
Okay, so I'm going to try to respect what Jack said, Fred, but I want to take a moment. I look at seeing Scott Himmelstein here, who is Deputy Secretary for Education, Ted Leppert, who runs Children Now, all of my friends in local government, school boards. When we talk about abuse, waste, and fraud in the system, there's little fraud. Sometimes there is. There's huge waste and abuse in that we don't have this results-oriented approach. For 35 years, I've wanted to literally blow up the system, having started running community programs on the streets. Here's how it would work. Think about it for a moment. Our low-performing schools sit in the middle of poor neighborhoods. The majority of those students' parents are at least 85% of the caseload that counties have in the whole health and human services area, including mental health. The programs that exist are so categorized in a myriad, all sort of Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids, trying to deal with a real problem. And none of those workers at the county level who went to school for 4+ years, teachers went to school for 4+ years, want to be just pushing paper. They didn't go to school to get a college degree to get rich, if that's what they're now doing. They want to help people. But they're held hostage by a system that doesn't empower them nor hold them accountable for outcomes. So I used to have all of the workers come to me and complain they had caseloads of 500 families. Indeed, they did. They were the same 500 families. What has to happen at the county level is that we say to those very dedicated workers and their unions, let's get real about actually helping people. So you put together the team of the public health nurse, the social worker, the mental health worker, drug alcohol workers, and mental health with probation. Those are the workers that we have responsibility for at the county level, and their teams in those school attendance areas held accountable for how are the kids doing in school and how are their parents doing. Then you start intervening with mental health services, whatever is needed, but there's accountability for those workers to deliver. And they're elected county supervisors. We literally publish the statistics so that if someone wanted to run against me in Contra Costa, what they would be able to do is say, McPeak's either delivering for the taxpayers or not, and our kids actually thriving. If you couple that with community policing that usually in an incorporated area is run by the cities and recreation, and finally have aligned those resources cutting across all the BS of the categorical programs, eliminate those, and can say to you, Fred Martin, yes, now you're getting some kind of return on your investment. The majority of Fred Martins in California, if you're getting a return on your investment, are going to say, I will put up more money. If we cannot show the taxpayers that we are doing more with less, none of them are going to trust us to do better with more. And that's the conundrum that we've got going in that survey, why you get this taxes or cut spending, and all of it is irrelevant until you get to, can we deliver a better deal for you, the taxpayer?
Thank you. I'm Nikki Gonzalez-Yuen, and I'm on the Peralta College's board over in the East Bay, but I also teach political science down at De Anza College, and I've got a question for Mark and Noel about how to change the conversation. I use the Next 10 website in my classes all the time, and Noel, I really want to thank you for making it happen. But here's what I'm finding my students telling me when they do the budget challenge, is they're saying, well, all right, we can't, this tool doesn't allow us to raise the raise taxes or balance the budget. We're always getting an imbalanced budget because the tool doesn't do it. And one of the things that I'm talking to my students about is just not, how do I frame this quickly? I'm trying not to make a speech. One of the things I talk to my students about is not the absence of money in the state, but where the money is. We've got 1% of the population having the income of the bottom 50% and 1% owning wealth that is more than the bottom 90%. And when students get that, their interest in raising taxes is much more, they're much more open to it. It's just where they want to raise the taxes. And what I'm trying to understand from, you know, Field Poll and from the Next 10 site is, how do you change the conversation so that when voters or when citizens are making decisions, they're making decisions in an enlightened way?
Okay, I think they get it.
Okay, thank you. Doing more polling where we're going to ask people for their knowledge about what is currently in place. I think that's an interesting avenue to go for toward. You know, with regard to the budget, I think it was a PPIC survey. I follow a lot of surveys in California that ask people, what's the biggest area of the state budget spending? And, you know, the real answer, as everyone in this room should know, is the public schools. By a big margin, about 50% of the state's budget is the public schools, yet the public itself is unable to identify the public schools as the single largest expenditure of state money. So there's a big disconnect when you're asking voters to make judgments on spending issues between what they know about the system and where they would propose to cut. And, in fact, you know, I think it has implications, actually, for tax increases and, you know, as well. When more voters say that this money is being spent on the prisons than on the schools, they then naturally say we should cut the prison budget. And I'm not advocating cutting the school budget, but I think you need voters to know where the money is being spent. And then when you're talking about taxes, I mean, we've polled on various types of tax increases all the time, and the ones that are the most popular, surprise, surprise, are the taxes that really don't affect the masses, that don't affect me. So if you want to increase taxes, well, tax the richest 1%, or tax the smokers, or tax the drinkers of alcohol because they can choose to do that or not, whereas don't tax things that I can't avoid. And that's a long truism of polling, and it hasn't changed over the 30 years of polling that we've been doing in California. So I think that's a given. But I do recognize that voters aren't really capable of making informed decisions when they don't know the facts of the current situation, and I think we would like to do more polling in that area.
No?
Yeah, I'd just like to say ditto to what Mark said. And the goal of Next 10 with the California Budget Challenge, as I said earlier, was always to educate Californians. I have this belief that the more Californians are informed of the issues, to know that half of the budget goes for education, to know what the cost is for prisons, that we as Californians will make better decisions. And we talked earlier about waste, fraud, and abuse. The fact of the matter is that waste, fraud, and abuse, it's a very small percentage of the, you know, of the budget. And, you know, people talk about, you know, we don't want to increase our taxes and we don't want to cut spending, but get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. But the fact of the matter is that waste, fraud, and abuse, it's not really that large of a percentage. But I think there's a deep belief that if we could get Californians better educated, Jeffersonian democracy, and can get Californians engaged, we can make better decisions.
I'm going to interject and ask Senator Maldonado a question because he said earlier on that he thought that Proposition 14's passage would correct 50 or 60% of the problem. And as I understand it, that proposition is aimed at changing the atmosphere within the legislature, which was a theme that the general public seemed to want. So let me put you on the spot and say, how do you think that result will come about? What would be the outcome? Say Proposition 14 passed, how would the legislature then change?
Well, I really believe that
the biggest problem facing Sacramento is partisan politics in the state capitol. And that's causing the state capitol, and the message that we're sending is that we're ungovernable. I mean, in the 1950s and 60s, when this great state was growing and we built a water system and a university system, we had this thing called cross-filing. And people would come together as Republicans and Democrats and would come together and would make decisions for California. And that has evolved into a process where we have the legislature that makes decisions for their next election. And it's really unfortunate because we have good people in Sacramento. We have smart people in Sacramento. But they're not voting their heart. They're not voting their district. And yesterday we just sworn in a speaker. That speaker is going to appoint a leadership team today. There's going to be committee chairs and so forth. I'm going down the process. And they're going to vote as a block. They're not going to move. Now, I know L.A. doesn't have the same system that San Francisco has, but yet they'll always vote in a block. And I just think that Proposition 14 is really a game changer because elected officials, not all the time, but I hope that some of the most important times, will vote for what they believe is best for California instead of what's good for party bosses. When I voted for the budget last year, let me tell you what happened to me the next day. I went to a convention the very next day, and I was stripped of all of, you know, this and that. And they're very afraid of Proposition 14. Party bosses are. I'll tell you why. Because they're going to lose their ability to manipulate members of the legislature. Because members of the legislature are no longer going to be worried about getting endorsement from the Republican or the Democrat Party in a primary. And they're going to get elected. What's very interesting from Common Cause is that I liked what he said. He said, we ought to do amendments in November where the largest voting bloc is. That's great. Why not elect a representative in November when the largest voting bloc gets to choose their members? Right now, it's a primary election. In November, it doesn't matter. So I really believe that and I haven't drank the Kool-Aid. I've been there for 11 years, my friends. And down the road, I shouldn't say this, but down the road, we ought to extend term limits. Not for me. I'll be gone, and it can't come from me because I'm polling, what, 12%? I mean, it can't come from me, but it's got to come 13%. It's got to come from nonprofits and so forth. And if you have a fair redistricting and you have an open primary and you have extended term limits down the road, California's fixed. And I like what these folks are doing here with California Forward and so forth. The only thing that I'm afraid of is that by the time we get it, we're going to be in the ocean. So let's fix it now in the Capitol, and I think 14 does that.
Sir, thank you.
My name is Steve Levy. You know, if we were in D.C., a good government group, they'd be talking about health care. What's the right thing to do for the economy? What should our energy policy be? Maybe they ought to be talking about changing the Senate filibuster rule and saying that if you did that, everything would go away. But they're not. You come here, and you're all great people. I know a lot of you. With the exception of Annette, you're talking about changing the rules with the faith that maybe the vote would change despite the fact that the voters aren't with you. So it's a plea to Noel and a question to Lenny and to Sonny. Can't we include in talking about choices something as basic as how does the budget relate to making the economy prosper? We have people that say the way to do that is to cut taxes and regulations. We have people on the other side. That's a conversation that I think would help inform these choices. How about a Annette's question? Why isn't that in there? We're 48th in spending. We have people that say that it's not money. You need reform. We have people that say you need money and reform. Can't we get content discussions in here? It sounds like you're thinking that if you change the rules, people will come in and vote like we did in the poll, but we're not standing up for those positions. Can't we? Anyhow, Sonny, Lenny, why aren't we talking about content instead of just process?
Lenny, you want to start?
Well, I'll start with agreeing with you 100% on the need for that conversation, Stephen. The number of people who care about governance are about as many people as are in this room. That's not representative of the state. What people care about is, are they getting value for their money? Is the state doing what it should be doing? Are the people I'm electing representing us well? And that conversation absolutely needs to happen. The reason we're talking about governance and process today is because that's the nature of the conversation that we were set up to have. My view is that what needs to happen over the next couple of years, in addition to really attractive reforms along the way, including open primaries, is that we actually need to engage the state in that conversation about what do we want and how do we get there from here, and not say it's someone else's task, but actually get the state involved in that conversation. And it is completely possible. The polling technology can be an enabler or it can be an inhibitor to that. Today, it often poses choices that, as Mark said, are uninformed, and they're false trade-offs. And so if we really want to have the conversation, we have to be informed and really have a dialogue about what we want. I'm actually more optimistic if you got a group of citizens in the room and said, I'm going to get all the information you need, and you'll have a fact base to be able to make this. You're not going to come out of this room until you have a set of solutions. I think we get very reasonable solutions. I think people want to have the things progress. They don't like the way we are today, but the system won't allow that conversation to happen. And the last thing I'd say is I think that what we're seeing here in this state is just the canary in the coal mine about what's going to happen across the rest of the country. And so the partisanship that we're seeing is as pronounced in Washington. We have through the initiative process, the collapse of mainstream media, social media advances. If we don't figure out how to turn that into something constructive so we have the conversation that you want, Stephen, this problem's going to happen more broadly across the country.
And, of course, Steve, you know I would dearly love to be talking about the content and what we do, not just the rules of the game. I'm representing California Forward, and it's a surprise that they let me out to represent them because I, you know, have such strong personal views. But I've earned that after 40 years of trying and actually, you know, I think having some insight to what needs to be done on these big things. I also will confess that I slept through Econ 101 in college, so I took 10 years to learn it from Lenny and you and a lot of others, and now I have this false sense of understanding California's economy. But if you want this dialogue, go to my Facebook page, and there is a huge program there. I mean, it's based on asking ourselves in California, how do we compete globally? I mean, that's the discipline that actually has to be brought to how we structure what we do in California. There are governance issues that empower people. And that's what Chris is talking about. It's what I have talked about since I was in local government. Recognize that the pace of global competition and the global marketplace is so fast that a centralized government decision-making model is anachronistic to being competitive globally. We have to rely on the local governments, actually citizens themselves, non-governmental structures, community structures, and devolve out of Sacramento and empower people. That's the real sort of secret, ultimately. We could have more discussion about that. Technology sort of enables it. We are simply trying to take the first step. But it's a conversation about, and people don't care about how government operates unless it's failing them. So now it's up to us who have been elected to represent them, to actually do something. And therein lies, I think, the other comment I'll close on. I don't really get jazzed about passing all these rules of how we do redistricting, how we elect people, although I support it. I agree. I agree with Prop 14. I agreed with what Common Cause put forward in terms of redistricting. It's sort of really interesting to see how many people have, you know, put their application in to be selected. That's great. I think most of our problems, if we could be taken care of, if we simply had more personal responsibility as citizens, we had greater leadership from the people that we elect, and we had accountability of both of us, then we could get at least 80-90% of the problems handled. So I welcome the conversation on content any day.
Okay, we have time for two more questions. I hope we can get questions that are different from the ones that have already been asked. And also, I was told to tell you that in your packets, there are cards in which you can write a question. And if you do that, we will make sure that you will get an answer by email, presumably, right? Thank you. Okay, so two more questions, sir. Roy, you want to take a stab?
It is true that this November there are efforts to, I think you've heard, to alter the term limits, potentially put majority vote on the budget to the voters. But given the polling results we have seen today from Mark, we have cause for concern. But those are two reforms that would, in my view, move the process forward and allow this broken government to perhaps heal. It is an education process. I mean, one thing that Mark didn't point out when he was talking about how Californians in general view both the spending and tax side of our budget is and how wrong they are about which is first, which is second, which is third, is that when asked, they said, these are poll people who took Paul said, we would like to do the budgeting. So Noel, you've been your job has been very successful. You have Californians saying we don't even trust the legislature to do the budget. We would like to do it ourselves, even though they're ignorant about what the major spending and income side of the budget is. Now, this does not come from the voters thinking that they're better. Well, they do think they're better. But it's not because they're just frustrated. And so I think unfortunately, some of these things have to be done through the initiative process because a lot of bad things have been put in our Constitution by the voters that have to be removed and or changed. And unfortunately, the legislature's not going to do it. Because they can't get two-thirds vote to, permission to go to the bathroom. So I'm suggesting really that, unfortunately, things that have been done through initiatives and ballot measures that got into our Constitution in order to make our Constitution slimmer and more accessible, those things are going to have to be done through the same process, unfortunately.
Okay, one final small question from Joe Matthews. Briefly, please, sir.
Yes, I'm a fellow and reporter at the New America Foundation, and I'd like to – this question is so crass, unsophisticated, and impolite that I should make clear that I ask it on my own behalf and not on behalf of the New America Foundation. And that question is directed to rich people, both inside and outside this room. There are many wonderful ideas we hear. The Constitutional Convention folks, California Forward, have done a lot of work and put out a lot of very interesting and specific proposals, even went to the trouble of filing them at the Attorney General's office, as have others. Why aren't rich folks and, in and outside this room and big companies inside and out of this room willing to pony up for some of this stuff and instead seem willing to throw their money, millions of their dollars, down what appears to be the rat hole of candidate elections in this sort of broken system?
They don't have the guts or other anatomy to actually stand up for what needs to be done. And they're just playing the protection game. And I am absolutely astounded and incensed by that. These are the very same people who've made their money, actually aren't subject to the retribution from either of the parties, and who complain all the time about the system being broken and no better and should be better California patriots.
Okay, thank you. Let me now turn this over to Thad Couser, who is a professor of political science at UC San Diego and also this year a visiting professor at Stanford University at the Lane Center and the Hoover Institution, and one of the leading experts, academic experts, on California politics. And Thad, before I turn it over to you, I just wanted to say that I see that Tim Hodson of the Center of Sacramento Studies, Cal State University Sacramento, is here. And Tim and his institute are another partner in this venture, so I just wanted to acknowledge Tim. Thad?
Great. Thank you so much, Jack. So when our three academic institutions worked with the pros at Next 10 to design this website, we had two guiding principles. The first is that we can't have a fruitful discussion about reform in this state through 30-second television ads. The normal way that initiatives work with adversarial campaigns throwing sound bites at each other doesn't give Californians what they need to know. So we wanted to take some of the academic and nonpartisan information about reform and put it at the fingertips of Californians who have all of these decisions in their hands. And the second thing was that we wanted to address head-on the challenge of connecting how making government work in Sacramento will make government work better for communities all across California. So as you'll see, the first thing you see on the website, if you go to californiachoices.org, is some of these individual stories from the people you heard from today and others, and we're going to be continuing to add to this, about why reform matters for them and connecting the dots between the rules of the game in Sacramento and the policies that come out of California. The best way to learn about this website is we hope you guys will all put it as your homepage for a few days and play around with it. But I just want to show you a few of the things to give you a sense of what we have. If you're interested in looking more closely at these opinion poll findings or anything else from other field polls or other major polls done in California and commentary from Mike Bender, a public opinion researcher, you can click through all these results on the public opinion section. The second thing is reform options. We wanted to take and condense links to almost everything that we could find out that academics know about different paths to reform, what happens when the legislature has done this in the past, what happens when you do reform through initiatives at the ballot box, what happens with constitutional conventions across the country, and what could happen without major changes to the Constitution. You can click through all those to find many useful links. You can find out at the end of the day what you can do if you want to support any of these routes to reform. And then the next thing I want to show you is for the ballot measures. The great folks at the Institute of Governmental Studies Library at Berkeley provide lots of nonpartisan information about ballot measures. What do each of these ballot measures do? What are the pros and cons? Who supports them? And where you can go to find out more information. That's something that we're going to have on the website, and we want to build in a tool that will help you study these initiatives, come up with your own vote recommendations, and email them to a friend. Create your own slate mailer. And the last thing I want to show you is that we have a blog where we're going to have a diverse group of experts, and we've invited all the folks on the panel here to blog about what's going on. So you've got Get Your Act Together California by Joe Matthews. We've got some great analysis of is partisan polarization the problem in California, students in reform, shredded safety nets by net. So it's the Catch-22 reform fundraising. If any of these titles grab you, go in there and participate in this blog and comment on these. So this is supposed to be using technology to have a statewide debate over reform in California. So please get to know it on your own. Please forward this site to as many people. Sign up for our Twitter feeds and use social media to spread the word and help us during the next half hour as we finish our conversation, help us build a better website. And so to do that, I want to turn things over to Susan Clark of Common Knowledge, who's been working with us. So thanks, Susan.
Thank you, Thad. Common Knowledge is a California-based nonpartisan civic education and engagement organization, and we are committed to making these issues accessible to all Californians in multiple languages. And I have to tell you, we do research up and down the state, and we are so excited about the launch of California Choices and your willingness to help dig in and help make it work better, because people are really looking for this kind of resource. I have to tell you, we get it all the time. Where can I go? What's the one-stop shop? Where's the starting point I can go to get this information and learn more about it and make better decisions? What we want to do now is we've had this amazing panel of reform leaders, but I also know from looking around the audience, we have a lot of reform leaders in the audience, and I want to thank you all for persisting and staying through here. What we want to do is find out a little bit more about who's in the audience. So we're going to ask you, anybody who came late, does everybody have a clicker? Raise your hand if you need a clicker. There's someone in the back who needs a clicker. Marcia, maybe you can help them. Okay, and another one over here. Okay, so remember what Sarah said. You can, vote three times, but whatever your last vote is before the clock ticks down is what's going to get counted. So we have the first question, what is your age? And we have under 25 is A, or B is 25 to 34, C, 35 to 44, D is 45 to 54, or E is the 55 plus. So let's go ahead and vote.
I'm afraid they're going to run out of numbers before they got to.
All right, everybody clear on that? Okay, we're counting down. Okay, so we don't have, like with the field poll, what the California electorate is or the California population, but committed reformers skew a little older than the average population. Why it's been so great working with the students who are involved in this project. Let's go to our next question. What is your ethnicity? So A is African American, B is Asian American or Pacific Islander, C is Caucasian, D is Hispanic or Latino, and E is mixed race or other. So let's go ahead and vote on what is your ethnicity. All right. And we're not surprised. So this is why we really, really applaud that that field poll was done in multiple languages, and how this project is really committed to connecting to a broader cross-section of Californians on reform. Let's go to the next question, which is about what sector. We only have five choices, so we tried to cluster things. You may wish there was an other, but just try and buddy up with whichever of these categories you most identify with. So A, private sector. B would be state or local government. C is some kind of civic group or philanthropic organization. D, higher education or K-12, and E is a community-based organization or advocacy group. So I understand they may be imperfect categories, but work with us here. And pick A, B, C, D, or E. Does anybody need to hear the categories again? All right, one more time. A, private sector. B, state, local government. C, civic group or philanthropic organization. D, higher education or K-12 education. E, community-based organization, advocacy group. Sonali is going to get us voting now. Well, this is very interesting. I think those people who've been working in reform a long time are going to make an argument that every single sector in the state is going to need to get involved to make reform happen. So our next question is, what is your ideology? I took Mark DiCamillo's categories from the field poll, but they have a very elegant way of doing it that takes four questions, and then we're jumping right to the end. So he will forgive me my abrupt methodology here. But we've got five choices for you. Are you A, a strong conservative, B, not very strong conservative, C, middle of the road, D, not very strong liberal, or E, strong liberal? Okay. So do people need to hear those again, or have you got it? Great. We're voting. Well, that would kind of have to do with some of those results we heard earlier about. Yeah, so at least you're somewhat consistent. What we're going to do now is that in the time we have to really get, now that we know who's in the room, get your input. I love everybody who's interested in reform. I don't care what your ideology is. So we want to set up a brief discussion about two topics. One is, what are the most important things people need to learn about reform in your mind? You know, if the point about all this is to help educate the public, what do they most need to know? And then how can we get them involved? So we're going to do a closed-ended question, And then if you don't like the choices and you want to add something else, good news is you have a conversation section to add your own ideas. This is just to get us started. So what reform issues do you think California voters most need to understand? And I suspect you may not want to have to pick only one, so we're going to let you vote twice. But if you could choose, first of all, the one that you think is the single most important, if you had to choose just one, and then we'll come back and we'll let you do a second choice. So what reform issues? First, fiscal issues about revenue and spending. We heard that discussed this morning. Electoral issues about how we choose our representatives. That could be Prop 14. It could be redistricting. It could be, term limits. C, the relationship between state and local governments and some of the issues that Chris McKenzie brought up. D, how the initiative system works and how it could be reformed. And E, how money affects politics. So all of the panelists spoke to all of these. So I'm going to reread them. And remember, this is your first choice, and then we'll go back and do a second choice. So A, fiscal issues about revenue and spending. B, electoral issues about how we choose our candidates. C, the relationship between state and local government. D, how the initiative system works. Or E, how money affects politics. If you had to choose one, what would you choose? We're going to vote now. If we have a clear winner, we don't have to re-vote, right? So this group wants to start with the fiscal issues. Can you see the results? So 56% of you thought that starting with the fiscal issues, followed up, number two was how money affects politics. And then we have the electoral issues, the initiative system. And so far, state and local governments got 1% going for it. But that was just what your first choice is. So do people want to vote again and do a second choice? Okay, great. I will quickly restate. A was fiscal. B was electoral issues. C was the relationship between state and local. D was the initiative system. And E was how money affects politics. So let's see if your second choice. We'll vote. Interesting. So when it came to the second choice, how money affects politics at 28% edged out fiscal issues at 25%. And then on the second choice, we have a tie in third place between state and local government and the initiative system, very closely followed, however, by the electoral issues and process. So what this says to me is the fact that the California Choices website is a place where you can go to learn about all of these is probably a pretty good thing. And the folks who are working on the website are going to need all of you to go in there and help make sure that the content on each of these issues is as good as it can be. We'll have one more conversation starter question, which is in addition to the content that is featured at California Choices, how are we going to get more people involved in reform, more Californians? So we've got the five things up here that many of the people in this room have espoused at one time or another. We're just going to do a single vote on this about which one do you think would get us furthest the fastest. So A is voter education for reform measures on the ballot. Can we get people better prepared to vote on the actual measures in front of them in June, in November? B is information about opportunities not yet on the ballot. Maybe it's a question of giving Californians access to information that isn't what somebody else decided to put on the ballot. Give them access to new ideas. C, show how reform would address their specific issues of concern, kind of speaking to Annette's point about don't make it arcane. Connect the dots for people about how reform, ties to their everyday lives. D, help California voters see the role that they've had in the problems and solutions. What have they passed? What have they done? How have they been codependent to kicking the can down the road, and how they could turn that around and be part of the solution? Or E, do we need new messengers for reform that reflect a broader range of California? Do we need a more diverse cadre of champions to help expand the movement? So I appreciate I just threw a lot at you, so we will repeat quickly. A is education, voter education about what's on the ballot. B is education about what could be on the ballot. C is show how reform affects people's particular, you know, their concerns in everyday lives. D, help them see the role they have in this issue in terms of both the problem and the solution. Or E, new messengers to get a broader range of Californians involved. Folks got that? Okay. Please vote. Okay. Seems like an overwhelming focus on C, which was showing voters how reform connects to their everyday lives. That has 49% of you responding. Then followed next by new messengers for reform at 21%. Then right close behind it at 20% is the role that Californians have had in the problem and could have in the solution. Coming in at 8% is voter education about reform measures on the ballot. And then at a 1%, because you only got one choice, right, was information about opportunities not yet on the ballot. So that was very interesting. So what we want to do now is ask you just to take a few minutes with these two questions that we just asked you, and you have them in your packet. So if you go into your packet on the end, you'll see a little worksheet that's got these two questions. So if you didn't care for the way it was framed, you can add your own answers to what's the most important information and how can we get more people involved. And we're going to be asking you during your brief discussion period to jot some notes down, and we want to collect those answers when you leave. So please don't walk out with your clicker, and please don't walk out without giving us the worksheet with your ideas, because what we'll be doing is helping the California Choices team take all of your input today, both on the clicker and on the comments, and roll it into how we're making this project work even harder. So if you could, just in the same spirit that our reform leaders up here are very collaborative, I would like you to turn to three or four other people, ideally someone you don't know, and find out who else here is as interested in reform as you are, and spend the next, about, 10 minutes talking about these two questions. And then we'll just hear a little bit about your answers. Does anybody have any questions? Great. Anything else? Okay. So we're really looking forward to your input.
Was he here for the whole thing?
You got the idea, got the kindling of matches.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday tomorrow. Okay, my dear, I'll see you on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. Yeah, thank you. Hi, Greg.
Hey,
how you doing,
good to
Chris?
See you. I am fine. How are you?
Nice one. I think state and local first.
Oh, yeah. We were just talking. Do you know Max?
Hi, Sonny. Nice to meet you, Max.
We were just talking about the first time there weren't many people to pick. And actually, it's the linchpin for the whole thing.
Yeah, it also in some ways connects with the fiscal side of it. You know, a lot of those state cutbacks show up in,
Take a picture.
Oh, yeah.
Let me get out of the way.
Yeah, no, I don't want to move down the road.
But I don't know how to even start that. We're going to do this strategic planning.
Just move a little, I'm going to take a picture.
Before I go, I wanted to say something just real quick for you.
Okay.
Include tax expenditures on those performance indicators.
You're right. We do actually. Because, yeah.
Okay, good.
And you get down to
nobody. I mean, nobody evaluates tax
efficiency in tax expenditure as well. So a benchmark against other states. I mean,
and they should all automatically be sunset. All time, because at least in the case of normal expenditures, you have a normal budget hearing process. So at least every year, at least in principle, these expenditures. But the tax expenditures, once they're in the code, that's it. You know. Anyway,
talk to you later. Thank you.
Is there any way
the
locals can do more than play defense? Is there any way the locals can increase your revenue source flexibility?
Got it. Okay.
And we looked very carefully at the two-thirds vote requirement, did some polling with some other groups, and decided this wasn't the year to do that, but that's on the list of things that we want to do on special taxes to lower that requirement. But we've just been talking about how do we get the folks who are working on a number of things together. I'm convinced our membership, and I think the schools and the counties are the same, would be willing to enter into an extensive discussion about the major changes that we need to make. And they're the ones who are talking to the press all the time and the people.
I mean, you know, if voters want to think that the money in Sacramento goes to a different school district than they support locally, I can't fight that, but if we can pass local school bonds,
well, that's why we have actually we've devoted a lot of resources in the last 6 years to educating city officials on how to pass local tax measures. How to pass. We give them political campaign trainings.
I mean, I write about that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, there's the miracle of Los Angeles. The $10 billion in bonds at the November 2008, the height of the recession.
I know.
We need to tap into what motivated. Yeah. And those people were my people on the west side voting for Latino. And
that's right.
I mean, they didn't have any kids going to L.A. USD.
That's right. But they feel that even in L.A., they apparently feel they can hold the local officials more accountable. And they can.
I think they saw the future.
Yes.
Through the bullshit. I think somehow they could say,
okay.
If they could do that in a recession,
let's
tap into it.
Well, I mean, I made the same comment.
All right.
Seeing all this incredible track record.
I mean, you got poor seniors.
Let's come back to a group.
They can keep cops.
Hopefully they'll start coming in sometime soon.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something.
Well, I think that's where the action is, and California Forward's talked about it, the Repair California group is. We've got to find a way through a number of changes to decentralize.
All right.
Less dependent.
We realize we're getting very close to the end of our time, but we wanted to hear just a few comments about what you thought were the most important information or tips, suggestions that you have for California Choices on the content. So what information should be on there? And then what outreach should we be focusing on? And we're hoping that you wrote your good comments down on the worksheets because we want to collect those and include those. And they'll be part of a post-event survey that we're going to send out to all of you committed reformers to help get additional feedback on the website. But let's just hear a few comments first from people who maybe had something else or a different take on what they thought California Choices ought to have in terms of content to help inform voters better. Who's got a comment? And I think Somerset has the mic, right? So raise your hand, and we will hear from you. Does anybody have a suggestion about content? Oh, come on, people. You are committed reformers. Okay, I see a hand in the back of the room.
Hi, I think it's very important to have something that makes people feel interconnected generationally.
Okay.
That, you know, I work a lot on California for Democracy, and I think that what I see is a lot of older people, my generation, feeling like they've got their life straightened out and not feeling committed to younger people, and to show how they are, there's a need for each generation
the
to be
the interconnection
involved.
And the interdependence of generations and these issues. Thank you very much. Okay, we want to hear someone else. A suggestion of some content or a focus point to make sure California Choices is teaching what you need. Okay? Carol.
I think one of the things, too, is to de-emotionalize certain words such as abuse, fraud, waste. When people hear those words immediately, no one wants to be for abuse, fraud, waste. So if you have a measure that has those out there, automatic, whether it's right, wrong, or different, they're going to go for that. De-emotionalize those words.
Right. So the idea is to take the charge out of this so then people can get to the content, get through all the vitriol. Excellent. Thanks. A couple other comments. I see Somerset, a gentleman maroon here.
Do whatever it takes to trivialize tough on crime.
Okay. Great. I see someone in red in the back.
I am an elected person, and I hear all the time from constituents that it's money matters and influence and the party leadership control, and that who has a chance. How can you trust anybody when it's only people that can be elected in those ways?
So the idea of helping people understand the influence of money on the system.
Well, they already feel they know what the influence is, and they want you to fix it so that they can trust whatever is said or done anywhere on any election.
So making sure that there's more, do what we can to increase trust. We're going to take two more comments, this lady in blue, and then Debbie over here in green.
I think you should work at creating an environment where people actually understand how their government works, what's the relationship between taxation and services, with maybe a little history thrown in. And once you've sent a message, don't think that once is enough. Repetition is a very good teaching tool.
Thank you. So I heard that it was help people understand how the system works, the link and relationship between taxation and services. And this, I've heard it said before, instead of voters sending a message, they need to be told they have to stay on message. And we had Somerset Tebby over here. And then we'll just move quickly to the second question.
I think we need to find a way to show people the long-term link and the issue of investment. When we talk about, there's really strong research that shows that if we invest in education and early childhood education, prenatal care and all those things, we'll reduce spending on prisons, but we don't seem to have anyone that is willing to take that long-term view. So how do we get voters to understand what the research clearly shows, that there's this interconnectedness? By investing now, we'll save later.
Great. So making sure that the issues are presented in a long-term kind of whole cycle context. So I appreciate we asked an important question, and we just are getting a few sample responses, and you are writing down on your worksheet your additional responses. So we're going to shift to our second question, which was in your thoughts and turning to your neighbors, what were some of the highlights of you said, how are we going to get more Californians involved? I love everybody in this room, but I want this room times, 10,000. So how are we going to do that? Great. Patty, in addition to going to this website and deciding what you're going to suggest to add to it and making sure that you've sent the link to all your friends, you're ready to do more. That's fantastic. You'll be asked. Okay.
I think if you could inform and educate us on how much it will cost us, either in dollars or adverse quality of life, if we do nothing, if we just continue to do the same. We're paying all the time, but we always hear how much is the change going to cost us, i.e. increased taxes, but we never are able to understand how it's going to affect our life if we don't change something.
So Al's talking about the consequences of the status quo and making that clear. Thank you. Okay. We'll take a couple more. Bill?
Follow up on that. I think you need to make the train wreck real, which is to say, illustrate exactly what is broken. I don't think most people in the state think there is a crisis. I think a lot of people have checked out or given up with the state government. They don't see that. We need to illustrate what is broken in very vivid terms so people can see it.
Make the crisis more real.
There's a perception that reform is necessary and being done so you can raise my taxes. And as long as people believe that's why reform is being done, they're not going to be very interested in reforming.
So if they think reform is about an agenda to raise taxes instead of reform is an agenda to get better results, that's not going to be very compelling. Who else had an outreach idea? I think Brian had one, and then the gal in yellow.
It's not really much of an idea. It's more of a suggestion that we can do it. It's actually define what reform is, not just say, oh, it's reform. We got to change it. Well, explain why. Not just why. It's like how, not just how. Well, define what it is being changed, like why it's necessary, but also go into more detail of. Oh, I'm trying to figure this out. Just go into more detail about how to build from whatever foundation you have. And if there's no foundation, explain why there's no foundation. You're basically defining and setting terms for the discussion ahead.
Thank you, Brian. I agree with you about the need to change the discussion, and that's the point of California Choices, is it's not just a soundbite like we want reform. What's reform? It's trying to give people the connection between the things they care about.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My name is Kianis Taylor. I'm with the Alameda County Transportation Improvement Authority. I do outreach and public affairs for the authority, and my input on outreach for getting people engaged in reform would just be to bring the messages about how they're really connected into the communities where they're being impacted. I think a lot of people just don't really see issues of reform being issues for them, quote unquote. Even looking around this room, I noticed that I'm one of two people of color that I know or that I see, and she and I happen to know each other. We didn't come together, but we happen to know each other through our work in the East Bay. So I just think that getting on the ground level and getting into the organizations and avenues that are doing work, outreaching into those ground level community groups and organizations will be a good start.
So the suggestion is to link this effort with the people in the communities and make a deeper reach into the community that
yes.
way. Thank you. So that was a great, kind of popcorn exercise. Please write down your answers. And like Patty, if you're ready to do more, you put your contact information and you will be asked. And now we're going to have Noel and David do some final remarks.
We're at the end here, but this is maybe the most important thing that you're all going to do today. So there's a debate going on as to what the logo should be for California Choices, and I'm not going to tell you which one I prefer, but I wanted to ask if you would vote right now on logo one or logo two. You still have, and the other thing about these clickers are expensive. Please do not walk out with these. We need to get them back. So we're going to have a vote now on one or two. Where's Sonali? Sonali, can you?
While you're doing that, I just wanted to, on the subject of artwork, to thank Karen Fiss's class at the California College of the Art that contributed artwork to envisioning the California Constitution that you saw at the beginning and will soon be featured in the website.
Thank you, Karen. Okay. All right, fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, David's going to wrap up, and then I'll have two comments, and you guys are finished.
Well, just very quickly, I want to say thanks again to everybody that helped make this happen, not least of all Noel Perry, with whom we're very happy to be partnered. And I forgot to mention earlier Corey Blyleven, who's our all-purpose utility everything at the Lane Center, and I want to thank her too. If I have one takeaway from this morning's gathering, it reminds me of a scene in Steven Spielberg's movie Amistad, which some of you might have seen. It's a very complicated story at one level, very simple at another, about a Spanish-flagged slave ship which is bound for Cuba, and the cargo, the slaves, mutiny, redirect the ship up the Atlantic coast of the United States. They come ashore, and then there's an enormous nest of legal issues about are they free, are they slaves, should they be sent back to Africa, the law of the sea, piracy, contract, everything comes into this big knot of problems. And a group of abolitionists go to former president, former Massachusetts congressman, former Secretary of State John Quincy Adams, and ask him to take on the case. And he almost instantaneously says he will. And the astonished abolitionists, given the readiness of his reply, say, well, how are you going to mount the defense? What's going to be the approach to this? And he says, I'm going to tell their story. Now, I think that's a really deep lesson, and I think it came out very prominently here today. A story is a framework for understanding, and it's also a plan for action. And I think our job, those of us who are really interested in changing California, we have to come up with a compelling story, a strong narrative that lets people understand the connection between governmental reform and the circumstances of their daily lives. That's, if we can concoct a story like that, I think we'll have done a very, very good job.
It's really very difficult to go after David, so I'm just going to say ditto to what David said. His very, very interesting story that makes that analogy. But I'd like to thank a few people, and then I'll just say a few comments. First of all, I'd like to thank Marsha Perry and Somerset Perry and Sonali of the Next 10 staff. Thank you very much for putting this together. And, of course, Sarah Henry. Where's Sarah? Sarah, thank you very much. And I also want to thank, from a Next 10 perspective, we're very, very excited to be partnering with Stanford, with Berkeley, and with Cal State. And we really feel like we have some intellectual firepower here with all of you. And I'd also like to thank all the other people that were engaged today. I'd like to thank the panel again. I'd like to thank Mark again. I'd like to thank Jack Citron for his moderating. And I'd like to thank and anybody else that I should have thanked that I haven't mentioned. I want to thank you. But final comments, what I said earlier, please go out and spread the website. Do the work, if you could, of reforming California. There were some very optimistic comments that we heard today. I'm very optimistic. I'm totally convinced that we can bring California back to the golden years that David talked about. So thanks again, and have a great day.